I must apologise if I cough because it's hard not to cough into the microphone. Sorry. So the reading tonight is Mark chapter 6, verses 45 to 52. And if you've not got a Bible with you but would like to follow it, there's some Bibles on the stands at the back. Please feel free to just go and fetch one. And it's the story of Jesus walking on the water. Now, I'm going to read this the first time I read it through. I'm going to read it through twice because it's quite short. But the first time I read it through, if you're happy to do this with me, I'd like you to just close your eyes and imagine that you're one of the disciples on the boat. Okay? Imagine that you're one of the disciples on the boat and what that might feel like. Okay, here we go. Mark 6, verses 45 to 52. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves, for their hearts were hardened. You can open your eyes now, and I'm going to just read it again. You might like to follow on the screen or in your Bibles this time. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, that's in the very early hours of the morning, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. Amen. So to start with, I'd just like to take a bit of a straw poll if people are willing to put their hands up. How many people here have known this story since you were a child? Most people. How many people sort of have learnt this in kind of adulthood? Yeah, a couple of people. Anyone that was the first time you've ever heard it? No. Okay. I'm not really surprised because I think it's quite a familiar story to us, isn't it? And that's why I wanted to get you all to close your eyes and try and imagine what it was like to be one of the disciples. Because I think sometimes we get quite over-familiar with some Bible stories, especially ones that we've known since Sunday school, since childhood. And we forget just how amazing they are, just how strange and terrifying they are. And this is one of those ones, isn't it? And it's become so much a part of our vocabulary. We use the words walking on water to describe someone who's a bit arrogant, don't we, sometimes? Oh, he thinks he can walk on water, you know? But I find actually thinking about what it must have been like to be one of the disciples there and trying to imagine the terror, the shock, the surprise, and then also the relief when they realise it's Jesus. I think that's helpful because it just restores to us that sense of wonder, that sense of reading this for the first time, that sense of reading the Bible with fresh eyes that we need sometimes. Now, you might have noticed as well that this isn't the version that quite often gets read of this story, the one where Peter jumps in and then he ends up sinking and Jesus has to pull him out. That's the version in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. Mark's version that we've read tonight is much more blunt in a way, and it's much more sparse. There's not so much detail in there. And it's also a bit more scathing about the disciples and their failure to understand Jesus. Now, that doesn't mean that the different versions contradict each other. It just means that they have a different emphasis. Mark is trying to tell us something different. He's trying to tell us something about Jesus. And I think we need to pay attention to what he's trying to say. Now, a couple of months ago, in one of the morning services, some of you might have been here, I preached on a passage from Mark chapter 1. And I just want to reiterate a bit of what I said then, that Mark is the shortest gospel, and it's really action-packed. And you might have noticed that the reading we've just had, it had the word immediately in it twice. You know, he's like, immediately, he did this, then he did this, then he did this, then this happened, then this happened. And because of that, it's a really good book of the Bible to read through all in one sitting. And I don't know if anyone took me up on the challenge that I set a few weeks ago. No one's owning up to it. To just spend an hour reading through the Gospel of Mark in one sitting. Do you know, you've got 168 hours in the next week. And my challenge to you is try and spend one of those hours reading the Gospel of Mark instead of looking at videos of cats on YouTube. Okay? So that's my challenge to you for the next week. But what I really want to focus on today is what this episode of Jesus walking on the water can teach us about discipleship. That is, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And so we will be focusing mainly on the experience of the disciples in this story. But first of all, I just want to flag up again what Jesus does right at the beginning of this passage. You might have noticed it. He's just been teaching the crowds, and he's just done the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. That's another one that we all know from Sunday school. He's fed thousands of people with just a few small loaves of bread and a few fish. The miracle of the expanding packed lunch. And then what does he do? He sends them away. He sends the crowds away and he sends the disciples off in the boat. And it says in verse 46, he went up on a mountainside to pray. So you probably, if you were here when I preached on Mark before, you're probably feeling a sense of deja vu because we had the same thing there, didn't we? In Mark chapter 1, Jesus going off by himself to pray. And he does it again here. So what does this show us? It shows us that it's not only once that Jesus does this, he does it regularly. He makes time, even in the middle of the crowds, even when his disciples seem to need him, to be alone with his Father. And again, I would reiterate, if Jesus needs to do that, how much more do I need to do that? And in Mark chapter 1, we see that Jesus was very intentional about it. He deliberately got up early and he went and found a quiet place. And it's the same here in Mark chapter 6. This time it's late at night. Jesus deliberately dismisses the crowds. He sends his disciples on ahead of him because he knows that he needs that time alone with his Father. And as we're talking about what it means to be a disciple tonight, the first thing I would say is that this is the absolute foundation. We need to spend time alone with our Father God, talking to him, listening to him, prayerfully reading the Bible, trying to get to grips with what God might be saying to us. And if we're not doing that, then we're going to find it very difficult to follow Jesus. So that's a challenge, another challenge for us all tonight. Let's ask ourselves honestly, am I prioritising time alone with my Father? You might need to get up a bit earlier. You might need to go to bed a bit earlier. You might need to take drastic action by actually putting it in your diary or switching off your screens. But I'm convinced that this is the foundation and the heartbeat of being a disciple. Prayer and prayerful reading of the Bible, daily, rhythmically, like breathing, like a heartbeat. And it's hard work. It's hard work. It's like training for a race. But it's so worthwhile. It's so worthwhile. And if this is something that you struggle with, and this is something, it is something I really struggle with, up and down, you know, at times, then do talk to some more mature Christians. You know, there's people here tonight. I have people like Gwen, Donald, who I'm sure would love to talk to you about reading the Bible and prayer and how to make that time and how to get those patterns in your life. And we can always pray and ask God for his help, and he will help us by his Spirit. So back to our story. While Jesus is praying, where are the disciples? Well, they're out on a boat in the middle of Lake Galilee. And we know that it was the middle of the night by now. Now, of course, we do know that some of the disciples were experienced fishermen. So they're quite used to being in the middle of Lake Galilee in the middle of the night. That was part of their job. But we're told that things started getting a bit rough on the lake. And in verse 48, it says that the wind was against them and that they were straining at the oars. And of course, Jesus is not with them. A couple of chapters ago, in chapter 4, they were in a similar position. They were in the boat in the middle of a storm in the middle of Lake Galilee. But Jesus was with them. Jesus was in the boat with them. He was asleep, but at least when things got rough, they were able to wake him up. And they don't know that Jesus is well aware of where they are, that he can see them, he's watching them from the land, and that he's about to come to them. So the first main point that I want to draw out from this passage about the experience of being a disciple is that being a disciple means sometimes straining against the oars. Now, we're never promised that when we become followers of Jesus that our whole lives are going to be lovely and smooth and easy and that we're going to be happy all the time. In fact, in Mark chapter 8, a little bit later, Jesus actually says to his disciples something quite hard. He says, "Whoever wants to be my disciple," this is Mark 8:34, "whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." And that doesn't sound so much fun, does it? Self-denial, carrying your cross. And of course, life with Jesus is worth it, isn't it? It's like that precious pearl in the parable, that the man sold everything he had to get that precious pearl. Because Jesus does promise life in all its fullness. But the way that we gain everything, this new life of Jesus, is by being willing to walk the way of the cross, by being willing to walk the way of sacrifice. And sometimes we can really identify with these disciples in that feeling of straining against the oars. Last week I was at Spring Harvest in Butlins, in Minehead. Has anyone been to Butlins? Few people. And there was one of those big leisure pools there, you know, with flumes and slides and wave machines. And they've also got this thing called the Lazy River, which is like a current that goes round in a circle. And basically, you don't even have to swim. You can just let yourself be taken around. It's quite nice. But Bethan, my 8-year-old daughter, decided she wanted to swim in the opposite direction of the waves. And of course, it was pretty much impossible. She was kind of going, she was trying and trying, but the waves just kept pulling her, and she was just being swept along. And you know, sometimes that's what it feels like to be a disciple of Jesus, that we're straining against the oars, we're swimming against the tide. Because the culture, the society that we're living in is so different from the values of Jesus' kingdom. We live in a culture which completely idolizes the self. We live in a culture that thinks denying yourself is foolishness, that self-sacrifice is crazy. Why would you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to pray? I mean, that's crazy. Why would you bother to read the Bible when you've got Netflix? You know? And our culture says, put yourself first. Do what feels good to you. If it makes you happy, that's the most important thing. Giving money to others, commitment, loving our neighbours, you know. A lot of us don't even know our neighbours' names because we're shut in our own houses, watching our screens. And following Jesus, well, it's just not on people's radars, is it? It's interesting, most of you know that I gave up my job about a year and a half ago to train to be a Baptist minister. And I found it really interesting hearing the reactions of ordinary, normal people, that is, not Christians, to what I'm doing. And people say things like this. They say, oh, it's great that you're following your dream. Or they say, oh, it's so great that you're doing something for you. I was thinking, doing something for me? I think if I wanted to do something for me, I don't think I'd become a Baptist minister. And following my dream, like I was auditioning for the X Factor or something. Don't know. But that's our culture, isn't it? That's what that's what people value. And if we're truly followers of Jesus, we're going to find ourselves going against that. We're going to find ourselves straining at the oars, going against the currents of our culture, what this world values: money, possessions, success, fame, entertainment, self-fulfillment. And also going against some of the moral norms of our culture as well. Culture that says, well, it's my body and I can do what I like with my body. A culture that says, I'm an adult, so it doesn't matter what I fill my mind with, what I watch. A culture that says, oh, it's my money, so I can spend it on whatever I like. And a culture that says, this is an interesting one, that the greatest aspiration for our children should be that they are happy. You hear this all the time. I don't mind what he does as long as he's happy. And of course we want our children to be happy. But don't we also want them to be loving, to be generous, to be compassionate, to be forgiving, to be risk takers, to be sacrificial followers of Jesus? And that might actually change the way that we parent them, or the way that we grandparent them, or Sunday school teach them, or whatever. So the reality is that as we follow Jesus, we frequently find ourselves in places where we are straining at the oars, where the wind is against us. But we are called to be countercultural. We are called to swim against the tide. But also the reality is that sometimes, like the disciples in this story, following Jesus leads us into places where we can't see him at the moment, where his presence doesn't feel close, and perhaps where it's dark and frightening. And maybe some of you are in one of those times at the moment. And you know, this story gives hope in those times, because what it teaches us is that these are the times when, in fact, we are right in the place where he wants us, because he's going to teach us. He's going to teach us all about who he is. He's going to reveal himself to us, and he's going to teach us about what it means to trust him. It's in these times when we are straining against the oars, when the wind is against us, that we often learn the most about who Jesus really is. So being a disciple is about straining against the oars. And being a disciple is about encountering Jesus. And I think this is the nub of what Mark is trying to do in this story. Because what he's trying to do here and throughout his gospel is to show us who Jesus is. And secondly, to show us how clueless the disciples were and how they just didn't recognize who he was. Mark wants us to know that Jesus is the Son of God. Right at the beginning of the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1, verse 1, he announces this, the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And then in chapter 1, verse 11, Jesus is baptized and the Spirit of God descends on Jesus like a dove. And there's this voice from heaven saying, you are my beloved Son, with you I am well pleased. And then right at the climax of the story, as Jesus dies on the cross, The veil of the temple is torn in two. And of course, the Roman centurion who has witnessed his death says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." But in between those two things, in between the beginning and the climax, Mark is showing us again and again. He's not always telling us, but he's often showing us. He's God. He's God. He's God. And he also portrays the disciples over and over again as not getting it, over and over again. And I think in this passage, in Mark chapter 6, Mark really wants to make it clear that this act of walking on the water is part of this showing us who Jesus is. It's a sign that reveals to us that Jesus is God. And there's a few clues that he gives us. And one of them is the actual act of walking on the water itself. Now, throughout the Old Testament and in the thought of the Jews at the time, the waters represented chaos. They represented everything that you fear, everything that you're worried about, disorder, chaos. And this springs right from Genesis chapter 1, creation. The earth was formless and desolate, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters of chaos. And only God can tame the waters. Only God can make order out of chaos. And this is deeply symbolic throughout the Old Testament and throughout the story of the Bible. God tames the waters, first at creation, and then, of course, in Exodus, he parts the waters, doesn't he, for the people of Israel to go through on dry land. And he does it again. He parts the waters of the Jordan for them to cross through in the promised land, into the promised land. And we just read again and again verses which refer to this. Job 9, verse 8. "He alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea." Psalm 77, verse 19. "Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen." These are talking about God. So Mark is showing us. He's showing us who Jesus is. This is who Jesus is. He's the one who treads on the sea. He's the one who tames the waters. He's God. He's God. And you may have noticed as we read the passage, verse 52, this strange reference to the loaves at the end of our reading. It says the disciples didn't understand about the loaves. Well, that of course refers back to what's just happened, the feeding of the 5,000 story. But he's making a link back again with the Exodus story. What did God do for the people of Israel when he brought them out of the land of Egypt? He provided bread in the wilderness, the manna that fell down from heaven. So God provides bread, and God makes a path through the sea. And that's what Jesus is doing here. Jesus has provided bread, and then he walks through the waters. So what Mark is doing is he is showing us who Jesus is. He's God. He's God. And they didn't understand. You might think they'd get it by now, because two chapters ago, they've seen him calm a storm, command the winds and the waves to be still, and they obeyed him. But at the end of that episode, it says that they were terrified and that they asked one another, "Who is this? Who is this that even the wind and waves obey him?" And almost as if to answer their question, here in verse 50, is it? Yeah. It says, what does Jesus say as he gets into the boat with them? He says, "Take courage, it is I." It is I. In Greek, ego eimi. I am. I am. The same words that come throughout John's gospel when Jesus is saying, "I am the bread of life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the good shepherd. I am the name of God, Yahweh. I am. It is I." The Apostle Paul in the letter to the Colossians says this of Jesus. "He is the image of the invisible God. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell." Jesus shows us what God is like. But notice that this encounter with Jesus is not a comfortable one for the disciples. It's fine at the end after they recognize who he is, but before that they are absolutely terrified. I don't know how you felt when you were trying to think yourself what it must have been like for them. but it actually says that they cried out. And one translation I read put it a bit more vividly, and it said, they screamed. You know, and I can imagine that they might have done that. They thought it was a ghost. They screamed. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because often we long for an experience of God's presence as a source of peace and comfort. But so many of the encounters with God in the Bible are actually terrifying and awesome and glorious. And we see in the Old Testament, don't we, how people couldn't just walk into God's presence without even thinking about it, because he was just too holy. It's like going too close to the sun, you just get burnt up. And I think that's the key to these two little words passing by in verse 48. It says he was about to pass by them, which seems a strange thing to say. But then we remember two famous encounters with God in the Old Testament. The one in Exodus 34 where Moses is hidden in a cleft in the rock and God passes by in all his glory. And God says, I'll cover you with my hand until I have passed by. And as God passes in front of Moses, God proclaims his own name, the Lord, I am, I am. And then in 1 Kings 19, Elijah has an encounter with God, where Elijah's told to go and stand on the mountain before the Lord, I am Yahweh, for I am is about to pass by. Jesus wanted to show his disciples who he was. He wanted to reveal himself to them. This is the God of glory, the God of power, the God who treads on the waters, the God who is awesome in power and sometimes terrifying. But of course, God is also the God who draws close, the God who meets us where we are. And this is also what Jesus does for his disciples. He sees that they can't cope. He sees that they're overwhelmed. He sees that they don't understand. And he's gracious. And he gets into the boat. And he speaks words of reassurance and peace to them. He says, take courage. Cheer up. Take heart. It's me. Don't be afraid. I'm here. I've got your back. And he calms the waves down so that they can row smoothly again. So being a disciple is about encountering Jesus. And as disciples, as followers of Jesus, we need to keep these two aspects of God's character in view. The God who is holy and awesome and powerful, who commands the wind and the waves, and the God who comes close, who cares for us, who knows what we need, and who speaks the words that we need to hear. Maybe you need to encounter the God of glory today. Maybe you need a fresh glimpse of the God of power, like that vision that Isaiah had in Isaiah chapter 6, when he saw God enthroned in all his glory, with seraphim attending him and crying, holy, holy, holy is the Lord. The whole earth is full of his glory. And we need that kind of encounter. We need glimpses of this kind of revelation. Sometimes we experience it in worship here, don't we? Because it's often these glimpses that give us the faith in God's power to accomplish his will, to go and do the things that he's asking us to do. And they give us the inspiration to respond to his call as Isaiah did. Or just to make us realize how sinful we are and how much we need him. Because Isaiah fell to his knees and he said, woe to me, for I am a man of unclean lips. But from that place of being brought to our knees, God is able to call us and God is able to use us. So encountering Jesus should sometimes make us gasp for breath. It should make our hearts beat faster and it should fill us with wonder. But maybe you need to encounter the God who comes close today. Maybe we're like the disciples, overwhelmed and struggling, just needing some words of peace and reassurance. And we need encounters with Jesus like that too. And he graciously gives them to us. He's here tonight. And he wants to meet with us. So being a disciple means straining at the oars. And being a disciple means encountering God in Jesus. And finally, being a disciple means lifelong learning. Getting it wrong and trying again. And as I said before, the disciples in Mark's gospel are always getting it wrong. They're always getting it wrong or being amazed or terrified or confused. And here it even says their hearts were hardened and they didn't understand. But you know, we're not meant to feel superior to them. We're meant to identify with them, and we're meant to be reassured that if Jesus chose these people, then he can choose us too, and he can use us too. And we often think of the disciples, don't we, in the book of Acts, when they went and preached to thousands of people and they set up churches, and how different they were to this kind of ragtag band of confused and terrified disciples. And in one sense, that's right, because the Holy Spirit coming at Pentecost transformed them and gave them that power and confidence to be able to go out and preach and become like a world-changing missionary movement. But you know, even at this point in the story, even in chapter 6, Jesus has already sent out the disciples. Chapter 6. Verse 6, verse 7, he began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over impure spirits. And he told them to heal and to preach. And I think this is incredibly encouraging, that even when we're weak and confused and we don't understand, and even when we don't have all the answers, Jesus can still choose us and Jesus can still use us for his purposes. So being a disciple means straining at the oars. Being a disciple means encountering Jesus. And being a disciple means lifelong learning, travelling forward with him every day as we seek to be more like him. Amen.